This is the Employment Law Show.
Precisely, and welcome to it, Monday night edition. It is 6:32, and we are ready to go. It's a sunny evening, and lots of time for you to chime in and call us here at the radio station. It will be our good pal Alex Lucifero, the lawyer, doing all the heavy lifting tonight, as always on a Monday. We're going to get to situations that trigger employment law disputes. That's going to be the main topic. That said, maintenance done. Alex, week that was. What do you got going on, pal?
Hey, Johnny. Thanks very much. Great to be back live on air talking employment law and workplace rights for employees. And as you said, John, for employers as well, employers certainly reach out with questions from time to time, and that's great. We're happy to hear from really anybody involved in the employment world, in the workplace. Another busy start to the week, John, continuing to help people with their workplace situation, solving problem, giving advice, helping people get the severance they're owed, of course, you know, continue to speak to people, you know, pretty much all day. John, it's been a long one today. And it's longer for someone who's dealing with a difficult work situation. You know, you're dealing with a problem at work. Maybe it's a colleague, maybe it's a manager, maybe it's just the situation. And as an employee in that situation, you don't know what to do. You don't know how to respond to your employer, and you just need some help. You at least need to know what options you have, what rights you have as an employee. And as you very well know, John, that's exactly what we are here to do and what we do all day, every day. We help people resolve their workplace problems. It's what we pride ourselves on. Certainly for myself, it is a pleasure to help people every single day and help them getting on the road to alleviating that stress and alleviating those concerns. A lot of times, John, these situations are actually pretty darn straightforward. They're pretty easily resolvable. And with a little bit of advice, a little bit of guidance, there you go. All of that stress is gone. All of that workplace anxiety is relieved. And listen, there are certainly more difficult situations that aren't perfectly resolvable every single time.
Yep.
But even in those situations, I mean, you at least need to know what your options are and, again, what your rights are. And the people that we speak with, I mean, they're just simply grateful to know at least that basic information and where they stand and what they can and can't do. So listen, if any of this is triggering a thought in your mind about a workplace situation that you're dealing with, maybe you've been let go from your job, you've been offered a severance package, maybe there are things that are changing at work and you're going into a new position, or maybe you're being demoted, you're just dealing with a stressful situation, do not be shy. Feel free to give us a call right now. It's an opportunity to speak with an employment lawyer. Let's solve your problem. Let's alleviate some of that workplace stress. I always encourage our listeners, do not be shy to call in. There are absolutely no bad questions when it comes to employment law. We're here to talk and we're here to help. And of course, if you're maybe a little too shy or it's a little too complicated a situation and you don't want to call in, you'd rather talk privately with myself or certainly with another lawyer at the firm, you can give us a call at the office as well. John will give you the number throughout the show, of course, and reach us there. Case in point, John, wanted to talk about the case of the day, an opportunity to chat quickly about a situation that came across my desk today. I spoke to this gentleman, I mean, literally a couple of hours ago, John, later this afternoon. Unfortunately, was let go from his job. He had been in this job for about 5 years or so. Fairly young, dare I say, fairly young fellow, John, in his early 40s, and was in a sales position at the company. And no fault of his own, decent performer, did well for the company, no issues. You know, it's one of those things. Companies restructuring, downsizing, budgets are getting tighter and tighter with a lot of companies. And he was one of 10 individuals that was let go from his job. And he reached out, wanted to have a chat about the severance that he was offered. And I was, you know, listen, we say quite often, John, that when we speak to people about severance, we are disappointed in the severance packages that at least initially employees receive. And that's because it's, I mean, it's true. Unfortunately, employers oftentimes offer employees far less severance than what they're actually owed. This, John, was a particularly egregious case, I would say, because again, this guy was a 5-year employee in his 40s, in a sales role. He was only offered, John, his minimum entitlements under the Employment Standards Act, those being 1 week per year of service. So he was offered 4 weeks of pay, or 5 weeks rather, excuse me, when he was let go, John. And there's plenty of misconception out there and myth that an employee might be owed 1 week per year of service if they're let go from their job. I mean, I'm here to definitively tell you that that is absolutely not the case. That is not how severance is calculated. It's not 1 week per year of service. It's not 2 weeks per year of service. The real way in which severance is calculated, and this is exactly what I told this gentleman, by the way, is that it is based on an employee's age, position, and years of service. The older you are, the longer you've been with the same company, the more senior or even the more specialized your position is, the more severance you are going to get. In this gentleman's case, Johnny was offered 5 weeks of pay as a five-year employee. Guess what? He's owed 6 months of pay, John. Not weeks, not 6 weeks, to be clear, 6 months of pay. That is, you know, effectively, what is that? 21 weeks more than what he was actually offered upon termination. Quite concerningly, John, to make, you know, a difficult situation worse, he wasn't even offered any kind of benefits coverage or pension contributions during that period of time. They actually forgot to continue it at all. They cut him off the day he was let go, which was last week. And that's a massive problem, by the way, because, again, the way severance works, an employee should receive all components of their compensation during the severance period. And so if this gentleman is owed 6 months of severance, which he is, he is also going to be owed 6 months of benefits continuation, 6 months of pension contributions that the company was matching that were worth $10,000 a year. So that's a significant amount of money right there. He also had a company vehicle that he used to his benefit, which we've got to put a number on, and that should be included in his severance entitlements as well. So, you know, there's a lot of work to do here, John. This gentleman is owed far more than what the company initially offered him. The good news, John, is number one, he reached out to us, so we're going to be helping him with this matter now. And the second piece of good news is this is actually a pretty straightforward situation. Yeah. This is not overly contentious stuff. The company knows that they've lowballed this guy, John. They know that they're going to have to pay something reasonable, and it's just a matter of reaching out, having that conversation, and figuring it out. And that's exactly what we're going to do moving forward.
Let's take a short break. Gary, stand by. You are my first guy on the phone line. Thank you for taking the time. We'll get back to you after a short break. We'll continue more of the Employment Law Show. Hang in there.
Welcome back to the Employment Law Show.
You sure are. Welcome back. It is 6:42. John Scholes, Alex Lucifero, Sam Firu, Tamarkin, LLP. He's the guy you want to reach out to with any concerns. Could be a simple chat. Could be something more in-depth. Not a problem. 1-855-821-5900. That's the number to reach Alex. And the email all the time is help@employmentlawyer.ca. But Gary, really appreciate you just standing by, pal. How are you tonight?
Doing great. Love the show, guys. It feels really good to be informed of my rights all the time.
I really appreciate you calling in. What's going on with you?
My employer is thinking from switching from 5 days a week to 4 days a week, so basically from an 8-hour day to a 10-hour day. I'm interested to know what rights I have in regards to that situation, going from 5 days to 4 days and 10-hour days instead of 8-hour days.
Yeah, really interesting situation, Gary. And this is an example of these four-day-a-week work weeks are becoming more and more popular. I mean, we've seen it in the news from time to time, but we've actually seen a number of employers implement four-day work weeks over the course of the past year, and so it is something that's gaining in popularity for sure. I mean, I take it from your comments, Gary, just to confirm. That moving from the 8-hour day to 10-hour day and 4 days or 5 days to 4 days rather doesn't change your pay at all, correct?
No. Well, actually, it will be an hour and a half less work a week.
Interesting. Okay, an hour and a half's work. So, listen, that is obviously the biggest concern, or let's say concern number one when it comes to these changes to employees' schedule. I mean, it is important to note that an employer doesn't have the automatic right to make these kinds of significant changes. Certainly, if they're going to result in a change in pay, an employer cannot force an employee to do so necessarily. Although there is a bit of a line there in the sense that, you know, an hour and a half per week, Gary, that might not be, let's say, a big enough change in terms of your compensation to really merit what we call a constructive dismissal. A constructive dismissal is effectively a breach of contract situation where you would have the rights to refuse the change or maybe to seek severance if the change was imposed on you. A change in pay of, you know, an hour and a half, is not, you know, don't get me wrong, that might be a significant enough amount of money depending on how much you earn. Listen, financially, it might not be enough to trigger a constructive dismissal, but I do still think that a change in your schedule from 8-hour days to 10-hour days, right, and 5 days to 4 days, I mean, that is a pretty major change, in my opinion, right? Especially if you have other obligations, whether that's childcare obligations or other family obligations, or, I mean, whatever it might be. Maybe you've got people have another part-time job that's going to mess things up. You know, in those circumstances, I think you could make the argument, Gary, that you as an employee have some leverage there to say, hold on a sec, guys, I'm in a very particular situation here where this is not going to work for me, right, for legitimate reasons. In a case like that, Gary, I would say you have every right to have that conversation, and hopefully there's a solution to be found there. If that's not the case, right, if there are no other real, you know, if it's just kind of a preference thing, Gary, it's a more of a delicate conversation, I would say, from your point of view. And you've got to weigh the pros and cons of a 4-day, 10-hour workday, right, instead of a 5-day, 8-hour workday. So, listen, the devil's going to be in the details, Gary. It's always the situation. I think if you have concerns, right, and those concerns with your employer are falling on deaf ears, I think it certainly merits a chat. And I would encourage you to listen, reach out, let's have a chat, let's figure out exactly what the game plan should be. I would not just, let the employer have their way and acquiesce without at least having the discussion first.
I understand. That's great to know.
So I'm going to give you that number, Gary, moving forward. I'm sure you have it anyway because you're an avid listener for sure, but 1-855-821-5900 to reach out to Alex and the team. John, thanks for standing by, pal. Good evening. How are you?
Oh, very good, thanks. How are you guys?
We're loving life on a Monday. Thanks for taking the time, pal. What's on your mind?
Well, I was listening to the employer that shortchanged the employee by almost 5.5 months or 5 months. I can't help but ask a question of, should there not be a penalty imposed on employers when they don't act fairly and they have to go, you have to take them to court to get the settlement or at least hire a lawyer to do it?
Yeah, listen, it's an excellent question, John. And certainly if you or anyone really going through something like this, you know, already you've got to deal with the stress and the emotional turmoil and, you know, just having to get your life in order as a result of being let go from your job and everything that that comes with. I mean, there's no doubt that that's going to be one of the most stressful situations in anyone's life, potentially. And so not only are you dealing with that, but certainly in a situation like I was mentioning at the top of the show, where an employee has been offered significantly less severance than they're actually owed. Like I said, I see your point, right? Should an employer not be punished for treating an employee so unfairly in a situation like that? And the law does provide for that, John. So in some circumstance, to be clear, not in every situation, in some circumstances, if an employer has acted particularly nasty, particularly egregious, and they have, for example, not even offered an employee their minimum employment standards as part of their termination, or they're, again, they've tried to shortchange them in some other way, our courts have certainly, and by the way, plenty of times before, punished employers with additional penalties over and above severance. And that could be a couple of different things, John. So again, if just an employer is acting in bad faith, an employer can be ordered to pay what are called aggravated or punitive damages. That's one example of the kind of situation you're talking about. If you're dealing with a termination where maybe there's a human rights concern, maybe you've been on medical leave, or you're having health issues, or for another reason related to, I don't know, maybe an employee's age or their religion or their gender or their race, in those situations, a court can order human rights damages. I'm not going to say those cases are overly common, John, but they do certainly happen from time to time. Other than those situations, listen, if we're just dealing with what I would say kind of an ordinary severance claim, John, where the employer, you know, maybe hasn't been the greatest employer or the most reasonable employer, but they haven't necessarily broken any hard and fast rules when it comes to bad faith or human rights damages. Listen, the legal recourse that the employee has is a reasonable severance package, John. And despite the difficult situation, despite the hard feelings, right? Don't get me wrong, that employee is going to get the severance that they're owed, that's for sure. But that's likely where the legal recourse stops.
And I appreciate your answer, and I guess I understand. But you know what? If the employee has to do his due diligence beyond just to get what is fair, it certainly seems that the courts should, maybe not even the courts, but the system should ahead of time have the employers know that if they're not being fair up front with all employees as they terminate them for whatever reason, that there's consequences. And it almost sounds like, you know, there is no real consequences for not being fair. And that seems so wrong.
You raise an excellent point, John, and you're spot on about this, which is, I mean, there are solutions to these problems. And as you alluded to, they don't even necessarily involve our courts, right? It's up to our governments, right? So, you know, most employees are governed by provincial employment legislation. In Ontario, that's the Employment Standards Act. There is nothing stopping any particular provincial government of ours to introduce legislation that increases an employee's severance entitlements when they're let go, right? And that would provide a higher floor, effectively, for employee severance entitlements so that it isn't as difficult or it isn't as contentious to make sure that an employee is getting their proper severance entitlements. It's something that's within the powers of, you know, of our government and our representatives. So it's a great point, John. It's not the first time, by the way, that something like that has been discussed. Of course, there are going to be debates and arguments and points on both sides, right? Whether as an employee or as an employer, you know, and that's the, you know, that's the system that we're currently in.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, John. Appreciate the call and the insight, pal. Thanks for listening as well. Situations that trigger employment law disputes. Well, how about this one? An employee's performance isn't as strong and the employer resorts to a termination for cause way too soon. They just pull that trigger, as we say, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's another example. And quite frankly, you know, John and Gary, our callers, ask great questions. And two other examples, John, of just situations that lead to, we don't even necessarily have to call them disputes, but that lead to conversations and you know, decisions that need to be made between an employer and an employee. And there are obviously dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of these kinds of situations. There are certainly some that we see on a very regular basis. And an employer terminating an employee for cause, and by the way, for cause means without any severance or notice whatsoever, on the spot, basically, with zero severance, terminating that employee or employees in those situations way too often and way too soon. Our law is very, very clear in Ontario, certainly, but across Canada as well, John, that terminations for cause, again, meaning terminations without severance or without notice, have to be the last resort of employers and reserved for the worst of situations and of employee concerns. Certainly, you know, if we're talking about really serious acts of misconduct, and again, think the worst of the worst of what an employee can do in the workplace, John, those will merit for cause terminations. We're talking about theft, fraud, certainly physical violence, anything of the sort is going to likely lead to a for cause termination. But certainly when we're talking about employee performance, and maybe that employee isn't performing as well as they should, or maybe there are things that they can do better, right? Those are not for cause situations, John. It is actually extremely difficult to terminate an employee for cause as a result of performance concerns. It still means, to be clear, John, that employee could be let go, right? I think that's something that we should reiterate to everybody listening. And listen, if you are not performing for your employer, there's a very good chance that you may not be at that employer for much longer. But if, again, unless we're talking about a worst case scenario, you are going to be owed severance if you are let go from your job, even if the employer had legitimate performance concerns. And severance, as we saw with our case of the day, it could be very significant. If you're a longer-term employee or a senior employee, severance could certainly be as much as 24 months of pay or 2 years of pay, right? And severance is going to be way more significant than a week or two per year of service. So they're going to be on the line for severance, that's for sure, even if an employee has some performance issues or there's some concerns there about their employment.
Got a couple minutes to go. Let's get into this one. And this one's important. I wanted to bring this one up, Alex, as we wrap up here, because I think a lot of people are either in this situation or they might be in the workforce in the future, just based on you know, finances and the way people hire with money. That's an employee's hired as an independent mm-hmm. contractor to save the company money, but they're not.
Absolutely. I mean, these situations are so commonplace, John, and as you just said, they're becoming more and more commonplace, and for a bunch of different reasons, truth be told. I mean, a lot of it is oftentimes the employer gets to save on, you know, enrolling that employee in, I don't know, maybe benefits coverage or saving on taxes or saving on contributions to employment insurance or CPP. There are a number of ways in which employers can save money by calling an employee and paying an employee as a quote-unquote contractor, or as what's known as an independent contractor. The problem with that situation, John, and it's not a problem, it's actually a good thing for the employee, because the law protects the employee in these kinds of situations. The law is smarter than that, quite frankly. You can't just put a label on a worker, call them an independent contractor, right, and alleviate yourself as an employer of all of the obligations that you have to your employees and all of the rights that the employee has as an employee. If you look like an employee and you talk like an employee and you act like an employee, and there are obviously a number of ways in which, you know, that becomes very obvious. You work full time with the company. You only work for one particular company. You're paid at regular times. You use company equipment, right? If you're being paid as a contractor right now, as you're listening to this, and you check all of those boxes, well, guess what? You're an employee of that company, not an independent contractor. It doesn't matter how you're paid. It doesn't matter that you do your own taxes. Actually, you can have your own business. You can be incorporated or in business for yourself and still be considered an employee of a company, or at the very least, a dependent contractor. Yeah. And this stuff matters, because if you're ever let go, or if you're working overtime, or if you want to take vacation, all of these are basic rights that you should have as an employee, then that you wouldn't have if you're considering yourself a contractor. Certainly, John, when it comes to severance, right, your entitlements are going to be significant. And even if your contract is terminated and you think you're an independent contractor, do yourself a favor, speak to an employment lawyer. There's a decent chance you're going to be an actual employee of that company, or again, even a dependent contractor, and still be owed severance in addition to whatever vacation pay or overtime pay you might be owed.
And that is all we got time for tonight. Appreciate the phone calls, guys. Appreciate you listening. We're back at it tomorrow at 6:30. Once again, in the meantime, reaching out to Alex. Do so. Don't be bashful. Say hi. Give him a call if you just want to discuss something simple or otherwise. 1-855-821-5900, help@employmentlawyer.ca, and that website, pocketemploymentlawyer.ca, too. We'll catch you tomorrow at 6:30 here on the Tuesday edition of the Employment Law Show. Enjoy the rest of your night.
The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Corus Entertainment.